I like that they pay my bill, but sometimes I like even more that they take the time to write me a personal thank you note for the guidance and support I gave them in the most difficult time in their life. I've heard that a contested family law case is the second most stressful event someone will ever encounter in their life, the only greater one being the loss of a child. And that makes sense to me.
Well, hello and welcome to the Jay Sherling Hughes Show, where we share the straight talk on how we have rapidly grown our family law practice. And my purpose here is to document what's working for us so that you can take that and you can recontextualize that in your practice and shorten your success curve. Now, you know, I talk all about family law because that's one of the narrow things, the few things that I know. And I have a special guest today, Gary Miles. So Gary and I met a few months ago, maybe a few weeks ago at this point, Gary. We became LinkedIn buddies. We had a phone conversation and just kind of sharing war stories back and forth. And through the course of that, I realized Gary had a ton of value to offer, not only me, but also my guests or my listeners to this show and family lawyers in particular. Gary's got a very, very fascinating story professionally. He was the managing partner at Huseman Jones and Miles in Baltimore for over three decades, 40 plus years in hard, sharp knuckles trial work. He finished up his last 15 or so years in family law, and we'll hear that transition, which is really interesting. Gary lives today in North Carolina with his wife, Brenda, and he is an avid golfer, and he also supports lawyers and helping and coaching them and training them and helping them do what he has been able to do so successfully. So, Gary, welcome to the show. Can't wait to hear more about your story.
Wow, Jeff, thank you so much. Thanks for that kind introduction. I really, really appreciate it.
Yeah. Now, Gary, when we were talking the other day, you were sharing with me your own journey from growing your practice very successfully. And you just started getting real vulnerable with me around some of your own challenges. So let's just jump right in the deep end, if you don't mind, and just kind of share that.
I have been practicing 45 years, as you said, but the first 11 or 12 years of that, I struggled with being in the active stage of alcoholism. I was living in alcoholism while I was practicing law. And at that time, I did mostly insurance defense. It didn't cause me not to come to the office, but it led me to be extremely fear-based, was maybe the biggest way it impacted on me. And it progressed to where I was a nightly drinker, nightly getting drunk, and feeling pretty awful the next day. And it sort of came to a tipping point when I had at a family party something I now know is what we call a blackout. That is, I had no memory of what happened the night before, which as lawyers, we pride ourselves on being smart and having a good memory. And to lose my memory from the night before made me realize I really was powerless over that and had to make a change. And I then entered a program for recovery, and I've now been sober for 32 years. Wow. On my podcast, The Free Lawyer, recently, I think it was an episode 205, I shared my story in more detail of alcoholism and recovery and what I think is important for lawyers to know about recovery if they're struggling or some friend or colleague is struggling. Mm-hmm. And I know that my life is completely different now. I have no interest or attraction to alcohol. It doesn't have any power over me. I don't think about it. If I go out to drink with you and your wife for dinner and you both have a drink, I don't care. Mm-hmm. Doesn't impact me. It's not a factor in my life anymore. And personally, I feel more confident. I feel more comfortable, more in touch with myself, more transparent, more genuine.
Yeah, I heard that podcast episode, Gary, and you didn't hold anything back as you walked through that. And it's pretty real. So back when you were really in the throes of your addiction, how was your professional performance?
Adequate. I don't know that people around me really knew. And maybe I didn't get to the stage where anything, I didn't drink in the morning. I didn't know then that if I had a drink in the morning, it would have made me feel better. I'm glad I didn't know that. I didn't drink at lunch. But as I say, I was not focused. I was not as productive. And as a trial lawyer, I was full of fear. And you can't be a trial lawyer and be afraid. So that was probably the biggest impact. Recovery has made me feel so free, so much more comfortable, so much more relaxed, confident, not in an arrogant way, but just comfortable.
Yeah. It seems like you're still very successful through that period of time at work. What was going on at home What was happening in those more personal relationships?
It's unusual. Most often when someone struggles with alcoholism, things at home are really terrible. But I drank in secret, and I managed to find a way to drink at home or outside in the yard where I like to work in a way that I wouldn't really be caught. And my then wife either was in denial, wasn't very aware, or I was really good of hiding it from her. And what happened is ultimately I made a promise to her, and I fessed up and said, I have a drinking problem and I'm going to stop. Mm-hmm. But I couldn't. And so the more I said I was going to and couldn't, the more underground I went. And so there's nothing more depressing than wanting to stop drinking and trying and trying and handling it by getting drunk in private, alone, in the basement when no one sees what I'm doing, or in the yard when I'm working in the garden, and trying to act sober when I'm really drunk.
Yeah. And so the program that you went through, can you describe that a little bit?
Well, I went through a 12-step program, but there are a lot of resources out there for people to tap into. And my main message to anyone who's struggling or who knows of someone who's struggling, it's funny, I did a poll once where I asked people that question, how many of you or folks you know in the practice of law are struggling with addiction? And the number is 98%. And that's not 98%, that might not be 98% of respondents are struggling, but they are someone they know is. It's pretty astonishing. Yeah.
And
I chaired the Lawyer Assistance Committee program in my area in Maryland for 20 years. That's a great resource. I would turn to them. Probably the Wisconsin Bar Association has something similar, but we had kind of a wellness program in Maryland with a trained alcohol advisor and a trained mental health social worker who could point folks in the right direction.
Yeah. One of the things I find refreshing with the content that you put out is you're not afraid to tackle some of these topics head on. You're one of the few people I know that's really talking a lot about mental health and for lawyers and where they're at in those areas. What are you finding are some of the main concerns that family lawyers in particular are up against with their mental health, with compassion fatigue?
I think there's several that come to mind. The first is just the general work stress of practicing family law and the number of hours it takes. Mm-hmm. And in this day and age, we all have cell phones, we have emails that we can look at home. Sometimes it depends on how the practitioner does it. Often our clients have our cell phone number and they can text us on Friday night at 10 because something dramatic happened and their whole evening might be shattered. Some of it is dealing with other lawyers. Seems to me most of the lawyers I deal with are very professional, very positive. They're problem solvers like I am, but some are much more difficult. And I think lawyers have become in recent years more and more challenging to work with. And I think most family lawyers are in a relatively small firm. I know your firm has 25 lawyers, but a lot of family lawyers are solos or in two or three person firms. They're struggling balancing working and having a practice. Our cases in family law are so tied with human emotion. We want our clients to win. We're worried about their kids. We're worried about them. They're full of confusion and fear. What will my life look like 3 years down the road? And we can get very connected with that and get very burned out worrying about our clients. The first 30 years of my practice, I did mostly insurance defense work. I represented for insurance companies. I represent tractor trailer drivers and trucking companies. Not a favored defendant. No one, you know, is a big fan of truck drivers. Although in the COVID, we learned we actually need them to get our goods to the stores.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I didn't struggle with compassion fatigue there because I wasn't connected with my insured, who was my client. He didn't even want to come to court. He didn't even care. He had insurance. Insurance covered it. It was only money. It wasn't my money. I wanted to do well. I wanted to do well for the insurance company. But my client in the case, my client in the trial, he and I had no real connection. And we had no connection after the case. And he candidly didn't care about the results. That's so different from family law, where we get so connected to our clients and root for them so hard.
Yeah. Why did you make that transition from insurance defense to family law? It's a pretty big leap.
It's a huge leap. They aren't connected to each other at all. I still do some of the insurance defense work. I was in a smaller firm and we had two main insurance companies we did a lot of work with. That's not a safe place to be, to have only two eggs in my basket, because if one gets broken, I've lost a large part of my practice. But the main reason was I wanted to do something I found more fulfilling. And I find family law extremely fulfilling because I take someone who's full of confusion and maybe anger and maybe fear, and I can see their future. I'm sure you've seen it too. You know, 3 years down the road, what their life will generally look like. And I can get them to that point, and I can help counsel them, guide them in a way to manage the stress of their case so that they're not so consumed by it. And when I'm when it's all done, I get a, not infrequently, a thank you note from the client about, I like that they pay my bill, but sometimes I like even more that they take the time to write me a personal thank you note for for the guidance and support I gave them in the most difficult time in their life. I've heard that a contested family law case is the second most stressful event someone will ever encounter in their life. The only greater one being the loss of a child. And that makes sense to me.
Yeah, that's, I've heard that same stat, and it's the, it's that ripping apart of that intimate relationship that is so painful, and it can be so devastating and hard to get over that. So when you made that transition, Gary, from working primarily with insurance companies to now serving many different clients in family law, how did you manage and how do you manage the compassion fatigue that inevitably sets in for family lawyers at some point?
A couple of ways. The first is I kind of made a conscious decision that while I'm fully invested in my client and their case, it's their marriage, it's their life, it's not mine. I have to maintain a certain emotional distance where I don't live and die with each case, because otherwise I'll just get burned out. I guess I analogize, if I was an oncologist, wouldn't be a good oncologist if I lost a patient and that messed with my brain too much. I couldn't go on and help the next patient. The other is, when I'm healing the case, I stop worrying about the results. Particularly in my days when I was drinking, I was so obsessed about the outcome. And now I focus on the process. You know, the process is to interview the client and draft the interest interrogatories and prepare my evidence for trial. If I focus on the process, I don't get so wrapped up in what will the outcome be and what does it mean if the other party gets more custody than my client wants. And probably the single most important thing is to take care of myself. We can get burned out if we take on too many cases, we work too hard, we build too many hours. And it, you know, we talk about self-care and it seems like, oh, there you go, talk about self-care again. But it really is essential to take breaks during the day. You know, sometimes we get to work and what do? Just work. We just keep spinning our wheels. If I'm a professional athlete, if I'm a marathon runner, I don't prepare for the marathon by running seven marathons in 7 days before the marathon, because I'll not have any strength left. And the same is true with what we do. We need to take breaks, need to eat well, need to watch out for any addictive behaviors, get exercise, have a sleep pattern, and find something we do that we enjoy, whether it's walking the dogs, pickleball, playing golf, connecting with friends, something so we can recharge our batteries.
Yeah. I discovered pickleball last year, and boy, it's a lot of fun.
It's fun, isn't it?
It's awesome.
And it's not very stressful, you know?
No, it's not. You can wail at the ball and get all that energy out of you. So I heard, just say a couple things there. If you don't mind, let me back up. I want to unpack a little bit, because you were dropping some really good stuff there. On the emotional distance part, you talked about that being one of the ways you manage this compassion fatigue. That seems like you have to come in and out of that emotional distance, right? Whenever you're working with a client, because they're sharing with you these really hard stories, and you're like one-on-one with them. And I know you have to be on some level, like tuning in on with that with them. So how do you tune out a little bit? Like, how do you do that?
I'm very tuned in, and I'm blessed to have some empathy. That's part of my character. But I guess I think if I was a therapist and you hear problems, people's problems all day, you're listening, you're mirroring what they say, you're expressing empathy, you want the best for them. But if you see 8 therapy clients again who come to you with their personal problems, you can't make them all your problems. Right. So I do listen, I do get tuned in, I do care, and I'm passionate about achieving their results, but I still don't make it my problem. It's not my marriage, it's not my children. Some of us have a lot of problems in our own personal lives, and there's always stuff happening in our own world, and that messes with my mind. Yeah. But with a client's problem, I know that if I take it to heart too much, if I was handling a divorce for my own child, I couldn't do a good job. Because I'm so emotionally invested in it. But if I was handling a divorce of your child, I could do that. And you might be my best friend, and I could still do that because it's not my, the emotional investment for me is not the same.
Yeah, I'm sure you see this, but the most difficult lawyers to get an agreement done with are those ones who just take it as their case, their problem, their kids are at stake and all that. They just like, they're really hard to work with.
Yes.
So emotionally involved.
And I'm not sure sometimes if they're so emotionally involved or they're acting like that because they want to work the case a little bit harder, but because I've seen both.
Yeah, we all have those people in our communities, right, in our bars that are like that, who just want to build a case up. So how do you show empathy, express empathy when you don't agree with the client's perspective on something? For example, so if a client's telling you their feelings and what the other party did to them and how they should be handled and so forth, and you know that's not the right way to go, how do you manage that delicate balance of expressing, showing empathy to the client, but not necessarily agreeing and endorsing what they're saying should be done?
So the first step is to listen intently. And it's hard for we lawyers to do that because it's very easy when the client starts sharing that to say, Mabel, that's not how it works. You got to tell your husband this. It's very easy to do that. That's our natural inclination because we see how incorrect that perspective is and we want to fix it. But instead, I have to make a conscious decision to step back and listen. And then when I'm finished listening, when she's finished sharing, you know, Mabel, I understand how you feel that way. It must be very frustrating when your husband does this. And it seems like an understandable step for you to then do that. Yes, yes, you got it. And then I say, but Mabel, can I offer you a different perspective? You know, what would it look like if instead of doing that, you took this step? Oh, I could never do that. Well, let's unpack that a little further. You know, maybe if you did that, maybe this would happen. So I listen. I kind of express my support and understanding of her feelings, and then I try to give her a different perspective so it doesn't come across like I'm arguing with her.
Yeah. You also said something really fascinating about you stop worrying about the results. I love that, Gary, because this is in our value statement. I tell my kids this all the time, focus on what you can control. So I hear you saying that's a variation of that focus on what you can control part, where you really zero in on the process and you're dialed in on that. How do you coach your clients, though? Like, get them into the process of what they're going through and not worry about the ultimate outcome that the judge may or may not decide or may or not be resolved through settlement. How do you do that with your clients?
The family law clients?
Yeah.
Not coaching clients. With family law clients, what I tell them to do is ignore the case, ignore that letter from that other lawyer. You're not going to like what he says. That's for me to handle. I'll make your job really simple. When I need information, you send it to me. When I need documents, you send it to me. If you're ever worried or scared, you call me. And other than that, just go to work and do a good job. Go to your kid's soccer game and be present with them. Yeah. And just ignore all the rest of it. I'm here to handle that. That's why you're paying me what you're paying me, is so I do the worrying for you. And usually it's not easy because you can't take away that experience. It is the second most stressful experience in life. But we can help by taking ownership of all those problems. And I'll even call them and say, you know, I got this letter from Mr. Hughes, and you may not like what's in the letter, but I'm going to send it to you, and then we can chat about it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So you're prepping them for what I put in the letter.
Right.
I'm usually pretty nice about those things, Gary.
I was just using you as an example. Of course you are.
I know. I'm messing with you. And then I want to get your coaching part too, which is one of the things I found most intriguing when we've previously discussed it. You talked also about taking care of yourself. Now, this is well known, right? But you've got some real practical insights on that, how you do that as a lawyer in particular, and the wellness aspect of your lifestyle, how you've managed your practice, incorporating wellness in that. So what are some of the best practices you've found as a practicing trial lawyer in family law, which is very stressful? How do you work wellness into that?
Well, I guess there are three kind of practical steps. The first is self-care, which we talked about before. Eating well, sleeping well, playing pickleball, finding time with your spouse and family, and really separating, you know, work from home. And that ties into the second one, which is setting boundaries. If you work for yourself, in some ways it's easier because you don't have to worry about setting boundaries from your managing partner who texts you at 5 o'clock at night or something. But you still have to set some boundaries with your client. When I get my cell phone, I say, don't send me confidential things here. That should be done by email. Don't send me general questions here. Only if you have an emergency or meeting someone in court, where are you? I can't find you, kind of a thing. So set boundaries with our client and engage in productivity practices. You know, the busier we are, usually the more unproductive we are. I encourage my clients to plan tomorrow, today. You know, before you go in the office on Monday, have a plan for what you're going to do, what files you're going to work on, when, what time of day, and really specific, because you don't walk in and say, well, what am I going to do now? Oh, the phone rang. Now I answer the phone, I answer the email, and all of a sudden you're not getting anything done. Practice time blocking, where I work on the Jones file from 9 to 9:45. No interruptions, staff doesn't come in, the boss doesn't come in. That's my focus. And then I'll answer all my emails and I'll answer all my calls. And I think those three really help. In terms of mindset things, there are three that I think are really, really important. The first is to have a gratitude practice. I tell lawyer clients and family law clients to really practice gratitude. And when you're going through a divorce, that's not easy. But I ask them to every morning for 30 days, write down three things they're grateful for. And three isn't a very big number, right? You may have three kids and there you go. But you can't write down the same thing twice. So after 20 days, you've written down 60 things you're grateful for. Well, there's nothing left. What am I going to do? So then you're in a search. You start that day like, darn it, I got to find three things today to be grateful for. And you know how that changes your perspective when you go through your day looking for what you can be grateful for. The other thing I have people do is really practice acceptance, which has a lot to do with what you said of control. They're kind of mirrors of each other. There are a lot of things in life we can't control. We can't control that our client's upset. We can't control that the other lawyer's a jerk. We have no power over those things. So let them be. Let our client be upset. Don't try to get her to not be upset. I mean, we try because that's part of our job, but we can't, if we have a client who's too demanding, we can't change that. So just let that be. And if we want to do something about it, we can make a decision. I don't want to represent you any longer. We have a choice to make, but that choice is ours.
Right.
But resisting people and circumstances causes us a lot of stress. And the other is mindfulness. I'm terribly poor at this. I could be at your house having a fun time at a cookout, and I'll start thinking like, well, when I get home, what chores am I going to do? Yep. It has so much to do with being present in the moment. And a lot of that has to do with what we talked about before, not worrying about the outcome. Today, my job's to answer these interrogatories. If I worry about whether my client's going to get custody or not while I'm drafting the answers, I'm just wasting precious mental energy. So really being truly present in the moment instead of in the future or in the past. If a hearing didn't go well, beat ourselves up for a little bit, then what did I learn from it and let it go?
I've been thinking a lot about gratitude over the past few months, and it's something that I put in my morning quiet time. And I can't think of too many negative events or emotions where gratitude is not an antidote to that.
It is the antidote to everything.
Yeah.
I mean, if you lose someone suddenly in your life, you can be grateful for how that person blessed you in so many ways and grateful that you're able to be with that person, you know, at their end stages. So whatever happens in life, we can be, you know, you can be grateful for lessons you've learned in your business that you started your business. Grateful for a failure. So many times we beat ourselves up when we lose. But what can we learn from that? You know, I'm a sports fan, and if my Ravens beat a team by 5 touchdowns, that's fun, but what did they learn? But when they lose to the Chiefs in the playoffs, it's like they should have run the ball more. What were they thinking? You know? So you learn much more from your failures than you do from your victories.
Yeah, I feel you on that. My Packers can't get past 49ers year after year after year, so it's maddening.
Yeah, I get it.
Let me shift gears a little bit, Gary. You got a lot of passion around supporting other lawyers and caring for them and lifting them up. And so you've developed a set of tools and methodologies for coaching and helping them. Can you talk a little bit about that, what you've learned, how you support your clients? What have you found are some of the results?
The results are phenomenal. But what I don't have is a set pattern of doing things. I imagine in your law firm, you have a lot of data, a lot of processes, etc. But I found every lawyer comes to me from a different place. They may come from a place of perfectionism or a lack of confidence or a lack of experience. And so my goal is to meet them where they are. And some of the things we talked about are essentials of everything, like gratitude and acceptance and being present are answers to everything. The trouble comes in applying them. You know, my boss is always yelling at me, what do I do? I can't stay. I come in. And then when the boss is nice the next day, you still have an attitude because you have an attitude against the boss. So we have to change that attitude to one of acceptance. So I really meet my clients where they are. I think the biggest gift of mentoring is so many lawyers have no one to talk to who has some level of wisdom and experience and empathy. So many lawyers feel alone. You know, they could be in a firm of 100 lawyers, but they feel alone because they don't have anyone they can speak openly about whatever is troubling them, whatever worries them, whatever inadequacies they feel. And so I, as a mentor or other coaches to lawyers, we can listen to them and they can be heard and understood. Just like a family law client craves that, so do lawyers. Yeah. And then we can come up with, you know, where do you want to be? I have my clients do two things always. Do a self-image. Where are you now? How do you see yourself as a lawyer? What are your strengths and what are your weaknesses? And then I ask them at the same time, draft a self-image of what you would like to be, you to be as a lawyer. And obviously it's...
They're defining the present and then you're asking them to define a future as well and put those side by side.
Yes. Oh, and then it's like, okay, so lack of confidence, worry, how do we change that to being a self-confident lawyer? What do we need to do to make that happen? And the thing I've learned this from my own coach who told me I could start a podcast. I laughed at him, said, I'm too mature to start a podcast. He said, look, you have a lot of experience and wisdom and you speak well, you could do a podcast. My coach saw in me ability to do things I didn't think I could do. And the amazing thing is how often I see in my lawyer clients a future of success that they don't see in themselves because they're always looking in the rear window. In the rear window, they haven't accomplished any of the things yet that I can see they're capable of in the future. And so their own limiting beliefs hold them back. So I help them to create a vision of a future that is much better than where they are now.
Yeah. You know, Gary, over the years, I've had maybe four or five coaches where I paid for their services. And the ones that I got the most value out of are the ones who had been there, done that, walked ahead. They didn't read this in books. They didn't go to some training program. They had years of experience and were 10 to 15 years ahead of me, especially if it pertained to a leadership environment that I was a part of at that time. So the fact that you've done that, you've managed a firm, built a family law practice, served clients, you've on both sides, like the business clients as well as, you know, the family law clients, you offer something really special there.
And I was not nearly as successful in growing my firm to the extent you did. But when I started doing family law, I was 50 and I had never done family law. I mean, I knew what it was, might have been a case here and there, but mostly I referred them out because I was too busy. I hadn't done it at all. And, you know, we grew it to where it supported three of us fairly quickly. It's fun to find what you really want to do. I encourage my coaching clients, if you're not happy, what are you doing? What would really set you on fire? What would you really enjoy? What would you find fulfilling if it's not what you're doing now? And then how would we make that happen?
Well, I want to also just make sure I emphasize your podcast. I've been listening to that. It's the Free Lawyer Podcast, but it's not free like in like pay me like dollars free. It stands for the concept around freedom, developing freedom as a lawyer, right? That's what your intent is there.
So many lawyers feel they're not free. They're stuck in their firm. They're stuck doing what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And they don't feel like they have personal freedom in their life.
Yeah. Wow. How would someone get a hold of you? How can one of our listeners reach out to you and connect with you?
The best way is on LinkedIn. I'm very, very active on LinkedIn under my name, Gary Miles. I answer messages every day or through my website, which is garymiles.net. And my email is gary@garymiles.net.
Awesome. Very good. Well, thank you so much for coming on the day and talking about compassion fatigue and your story and your authenticity around your own struggles, Gary. It's been real enlightening for me and I found it fascinating.
Well, thank you, Jeff, for having me. I love that you do the show and I love that you model to other attorneys how they can successfully grow a firm, do well financially, but most importantly, be happy, fulfilled, and free.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate it.